Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Check out the website at scotthorton.org. More than 4,000 interviews now going back to 2003. scotthorton.org. And sign up for the podcast feed there as well. And follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Introducing Anthony Walker. He is a veteran of the Afghan War. Left the military honorably as a sergeant. And has now become something of an anti-war activist. He's got an article we're running today on antiwar.com called The Ghosts of Direct Action. And he has his own blog, which I'll urge you guys to check out. It's called PsyopGuy.com. Welcome to the show, Anthony. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you here. Great article that you wrote. Plenty to talk about there. But first of all, are you running some PsyOp on me?
No, you know, I'm just, you know, a guy with a story and, you know, trying to get the word out there about, you know, things that happen over there.
All right. So first of all, talk about, you know, your name, rank and serial number and the tours of duty you served, where and when, and what exactly was your role as a psychological operations warrior?
Sure. So I did 4 deployments, 3 in Afghanistan and 1 in Yemen. And the thing about psychological operations is that your job changes a lot depending on where you are sent and who you're supporting and that kind of thing. So I did a couple embassy duties where I was supporting the U.S. Embassy. That's what I did in Yemen. And then I did tactical deployments. So on tactical deployments, my job was to keep civilians away from the operations we were conducting, to keep civilians safe. And then the second part of my job as a tactical PSYOPer was to conduct interrogations, to do what we call battlefield interrogation.
Okay, well, so first one first then, I guess. Separating civilians, that means dropping leaflets from helicopters saying get out of town because the Marines are coming, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I was closer to it. So we'd actually be out, you know, with a platoon conducting an operation. And so, for example, what might happen is, you know, we're assaulting a compound. You know, there's explosions, there's stuff going on, and people, you know, if we're in a somewhat of an urban area, people will actually come out and get involved, you know, and want to know, hey, what, you know, what's all the noise and are people being heard and this, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd actually get on my loudspeaker, use an interpreter or use the Pashto that I memorized. You know, I memorized a lot of messages in Pashto. You know, and I would get out there and say, go back into your home, stay away. You know, this is not for you. You know, you'll be safe as long as you're in your home and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And these are on night raids primarily?
Yeah, it was, you know, when I worked in Afghanistan for about a year. Yeah, it was night raids. I was living at night. I was working at night. You know, I'd wake up every day at, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon and my whole job would be nighttime stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then, so, I mean, I almost hate to ask this, but I guess that's why you're here. When there's a night raid going on, I guess it's Rangers or other, you know, Delta or other special operations guys. I guess you say 2nd Ranger Battalion here. You mentioned in your article. These guys do their night raid. You're out there on a bullhorn saying, everybody stay inside, nothing to see here. Stay inside, you'll be safe, as you just said, something like that. Was that really true? How often did neighbors get involved, and how often did, you know, innocent people get caught up in these raids? I mean, assuming the guilt of the person being raided, just for the sake of argument.
Right. Well, you know, people would get out and get involved in operations a lot. You know, I mean, it just, you know, it really is human nature. You know, you hear something going on in your neighborhood, and of course you're going to want to get out there and see what's going on. And another thing, you know, we might have snipers climbing up on top of the roof of a home that we're not assaulting, but is adjacent to the compound we're assaulting, you know? So if you got, you know, if you're not even living in the compound we're interested in, but there's someone on your roof with a gun, you know, of course you're going to, you know, do something about it. You're going to shoot at him or go outside and say, what the hell are you doing up on my roof and that kind of thing. So, I mean, we were involved with civilians on the battlefield a lot. And, as far as, you know, how it really went down, you know, sometimes I would be able to do my job and I'd be able to get them out of the way. And a lot of times they would just end up getting shot or, getting harmed in some way, simply because, you know, when you're a trained killer, you know, you see everybody as a threat, you know. You don't think, oh, this is just a civilian. You think this is a person that's going to do something, you know, to kill me or hurt me.
So then, I mean, I guess, you know, it's hard to be specific about, you know, how it happens in general. But if you're saying, I think it sounds like you're implying there, people get shot when they come outside, even if they don't have an AK necessarily. They're not necessarily coming to join the fight on their neighbor's behalf, but just to see what's going on. But to a ranger in the middle of a raid, hey, any Afghan coming in my peripheral vision is getting shot. Forget it. That kind of thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot. But I will have to say that it depends on who you're working with. You know, it's I don't like making broad generalizations because certain platoons were just the absolute epitome of surgical special operations force. You know, they would not harm anybody that didn't you know deserve it or that wasn't a bad guy. They would get in there, you know, they would take prisoners, they would only shoot if they had to, and they would stay away from civilians and they would keep civilians safe. But then, you know, I would work with another platoon and it would be the, you know, a whole different story. And you know, someone might peek their head out of their compound to see what's going on, and they're getting shot at.
Yeah. And now, so when it comes to these night raids, did you have, I don't know if you ever had the firsthand information, but did you have a very good impression of how often they actually found the guy they were looking for and or killed the guy that they were looking for and or, you know, whether it made sense to be looking for the guy that they were after or whether, you know, because we hear these stories that basically, whoever rats on the guy over the hill first wins, you know, and if you don't inform on your neighbor first, you know, like in the old Soviet Union, if you don't inform on your old neighbor first, they might inform on you first. So that's who ends up getting raided is just average schmucks who are accused by other schmucks.
Well, in terms of who's getting raided, in my experience, and I think this goes for most of the operations that are conducted in Afghanistan, the decision to go after somebody is usually based on signals intelligence. So it's based on an analysis of their call patterns and who they're talking to and who they're connected to via cell phones. You know, human intelligence is really unreliable. And it, you know, I think out of over 100 raids, maybe one of them was based on human intelligence. All the rest were based on signals intelligence. So,
and did the signals intelligence seem that much more accurate to you as far as, you know, the connections here? Because we're all just 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon or whatever, right?
You know, it was accurate, but in my opinion, having, you know, gone in with the intelligence guys and sit there and see how they do what they do. I just thought that it seemed rather easy to get caught up in that dragnet of what would place you on a list of saying this is a bad guy. You know, so you might be in contact with somebody, you might be talking to somebody on the phone as an Afghan, and you don't really have any intention. You're not trying to facilitate IEDs or really anything at all. It just might be a friend or a family member, but that person would, you know, become, oh, well, maybe this is somebody we should go after, you know? So I just thought it was really easy to kind of get caught up in that, you know, to be on that list of potential bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you even have people who are in contact with this guy who's not necessarily part of the Taliban. Now they're under suspicion too, based on a maybe in the first place with this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, the cultural aspect is really important too, because, you know, if somebody in Afghanistan and in Pashtun areas, if somebody comes and knocks on your door and says, hey, I need a place to stay, it's a deeply held, you know, value, cultural value that person gets to stay, you know, that they would have a place to stay, you know, something to eat and that kind of thing. So it's just a different culture. And I know for a fact that we were raiding homes of people that were just distant family members or connected to the targeted individual in some way that were just fulfilling their cultural duty and were not intending to necessarily facilitate an insurgency.
Yeah. And then they get caught up, imprisoned and or shot too.
Yeah. I mean, in the real, you know, the real danger is getting shot in a raid, because when it comes to getting in prison, the standards for that are really high. And I mean, we would let guys go after a couple weeks all the time. I mean, it's really hard to keep someone in prison.
All right. Well, so now let's talk a little bit more about that and your role in interrogation. I think I gather that your time in the embassy you're referring to there was when you were in Yemen. And we can talk about that later. But in interrogation, that was when you were in Afghanistan?
Yeah, interrogation was when I was in Afghanistan and when I was supporting JSOC direct action missions.
Mm-hmm. And then, so maybe you can, you know, clear something up, because what we've heard, of course, what's obviously a fact, is they rewrote the Army Field Manual right after they changed the law to say that everybody back to the Army Field Manual with the Detainee Treatment Act of 2005. They rewrote it, and in Appendix M, they left in all kinds of temperature manipulation and sleep deprivation, and I forget stress positions or not. I think stress positions are still in there. And we've also had some journalism over the time, although much less than we would like, about the Bagram prison, but also the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, elbow, elbow, secret Bagram prison that where less law applies, where maybe the CIA has more reign, or maybe where higher value targets are kept and where Appendix M is applied to them. So I just wonder, you know, if you can tell us anything about that.
Superior blends of premium coffee, roasted fresh in Zionsville, Indiana. Darren's Coffee satisfies the casual and the connoisseur. Scott Horton Show listeners, visit darrenscoffee.com and use the coupon code Scott at checkout for free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Because everyone deserves to drink great coffee.
Sure. So just to give you the layout here of what we're talking about, I'm at in my experience, I was at a task force. So we're as close as you can be to the battlefield, and we're actually going out there and getting these guys. Now, once they're arrested or detained and determined, okay, this is maybe a high value target, or this is someone that is really interesting to coalition forces, then they'd get sent off somewhere else. And that would be Bagram or whatever goes on up there. But at my level, the interrogators were very restrained. I mean, they were not allowed to do anything that you might see in that field manual. They weren't allowed to do any kind of stress positions or anything like that. They were simply had to go in there and try to convince these guys to divulge information based on their manipulation skills, you know, how I'm going to, you know, what kind of carrots and sticks I'm going to use to try to get this guy to talk. But, in my experience, it just seemed like they left some of that more reprehensible stuff to a small group of people that were empowered to do it.
And again, I'm sorry, what years were you over there beginning and when?
It was, August. One deployment where I experienced most of the things we're talking about today was from August 2008 to August 2009. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, certainly long after the Taguba report and the, a lot of the, memos being repealed and the Supreme Court decisions, you know, Rasul and Boumediene and all those things started coming down in the Bush years there. So, well, that's good at least that they didn't, you know, make you participate in any direct, war crimes as far as that goes. So how did that go? I mean, well, and this kind of goes back to what you said before, and I know it's a figure of speech, but it's kind of important about who's a bad guy and who's not, and bad guy and Taliban end up being the same thing, but not all the resistance were Taliban, right? And I just wonder, even when it comes to the guys that you're actually after, how many of even these bad guys are just farmers who are trying to defend their land from foreign occupation, and how many of them, you know, secretly worked for Mullah Omar all along or whatever it was?
Well, if we got to a targeted individual and found who we were looking for, typically that person was involved in making IEDs, involved in actually killing, you know, American soldiers. It was just the people around him that would get caught up in the dragnet that tended to be associates, family members, something like that. And they would be roughed up on the objective, you know, during interrogation, might get roughed up. They would get taken for a week or two for interrogation back at our base and then released. And I point this out in my article, I think, if I remember correctly. They, you know, the being taken far from your home and held for a couple weeks for an Afghan is a terrible situation because there's a lot of lawlessness, and the family members back home, you know, have their crops destroyed or have their you know, things stolen. A lot can happen. So even though they were getting held for a couple of weeks and then released again, it wrought a lot of damage to the families and to the, you know, into the household. So those are the people that I really feel like, you know, deserve our attention and kind of look at and say, well, we might have gotten one targeted individual. What about the four or five or six other guys that got beat up or that accidentally got shot or got taken away from their homes for a couple weeks?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I guess the audience should know that, and not that, you know, this ever happened before, that someone tried to lie to us or anything, but, you know, before this interview, I never knew you from Adam, and so I asked for a little verification of who you are, and you sent me the transcript from the Joint Services here. From the military, explaining your record and all of that, very in depth, and also two pictures that are very graphic that we did not publish at antiwar.com today, but that I guess I didn't put them in Google Images, but I certainly have never seen them before, and one of them, certainly maybe both, are about exactly what you describe in the article.
Right.
Of this one, is it a ranger who cut a square piece out of this woman's neck for a trophy?
Yeah.
And that sounds like a lie, but I've seen the picture of where the skin used to be, at least.
And that's why I kept those pictures, because, you know, I knew that I would never be able to get people to believe me if I didn't have something to say, look at this stuff really happens, you know? And, you know, I'm so glad that I can have something that's a testament to the things that I saw.
So, you know, I mean, part of this is it's the longest war in American history. It's gone on so long. I think, you know, most Americans probably don't even know that the war in Afghanistan is still going on, because there's been a partisan interest in ignoring it for the last 8 years on both sides, really, because the liberals don't want to criticize Obama for his surge and his escalation and all what he's doing. And the conservatives, they don't want to give him credit. So everybody's just kind of silent, and the whole story has slipped from the American imagination, I think, quite a bit. But so, you know, I'm really glad to see that you've started writing, and I hope you'll submit more of your articles to antiwar.com as well, because you're a pretty decent writer too, it seems like to me, and it seems like you have quite a bit to tell people here. But so, as far as the audio version here goes, what do you want to tell people? Bottom line, you have not just my listeners, but their friends and family who just walked into the room, and this is your one chance to make them understand what you want them to understand about the war in Afghanistan, Anthony.
I think what's most important to me that people understand is that no matter what intention you have, no matter what reason you have for going to war, once young boys that know nothing of the world outside of their little bubble, once they get into situations that the army, the military forces them into, they have to make decisions that no young man should ever have to make. And terrible things happen. Horror happens. Murders happen. Death happens. Dislocation happens. And it's always going to be like that. And war is always going to be absurd and horrible and terrible, and it doesn't matter what we do to try to make it not that way, it's always going to be like that.
Yeah, I think people, and you know, we were all raised this way, right? This is probably a big part of how you ended up in the army in the first place, is we spend our entire youths watching football games and watching these fancy commercials for aim high and be all that you can be, and we're looking for a few good men. And war is basically like standing around in your dress uniform with a shiny silver sword, you know, strutting around and getting paid a lot of money and prove that you're a real man, you know, as you make the transition to full adulthood and all of these things. But nobody's talking about what's it like to go on a night raid and kill somebody.
Right.
Somebody who, you know, maybe was just coming outside to see what was going on. Because, I mean, obviously the victims in these cases are the victims. But, you know, the kids shooting them, they're, in a sense, the victims too. We send them over there under the theory that in our democracy, the adults here would only send them off to war to fight for a real good reason, to kill people and risk their lives for a real good reason. Instead, we got them going out on night raids for 16 years to no end whatsoever. And now they're shooting the neighbor, and then we wonder why they shoot themselves in the head when they come home, when all they can do is remember that time they shot the neighbor, you know?
Right.
It's not fair, really.
No,
we get stuck in this TV narrative. We never have to grapple with what's the real war like.
Right.
So, anyway.
That's true. I mean, it is what war has always been, and it's never going to change. So I just hope that as a country, as a world, we can take a look and say, look, it's not worth it. You know, war is not worth it.
All right. Well, listen, there's quite a few vets I've come across over the years who've decided that their way of dealing with what they you know, learn and what they saw, what they experienced over there is to help others by telling the truth about it to them. There's, you know, all different forms of counter-recruitment, from showing up at the high schools to writing essays as you're doing now, to writing books, giving talks, forming groups, whatever you can do. And when you say, hey, I was there and I was a veteran and I know this stuff, that makes your word, you know, 10 times more credible than mine when you say it. So, you know, it's very important what you're doing, Anthony. I really appreciate it, and I hope you do continue.
Yeah, thanks so much for just giving me the chance to, you know, to get my story out there.
Well, you keep writing these articles and send them on.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right, y'all. That's Anthony Walker. He did 8 years in the U.S. Army, was a sergeant. Psychological operations specialist there, three tours in Afghanistan, one in Yemen. This piece is at antiwar.com today, original.antiwar.com. The Ghosts of Direct Action. It's really a hard-hitting piece. I think you guys maybe could do your part to help make this thing viral for once. And check out Anthony's great blog, too. It's psyopguy.com, psyopguy.com. All right, y'all, and that's the Scott Horton Show. Check out the archives and sign up for the podcast feed at scotthorton.org. Help support at scotthorton.org/donate. All kinds of great kickbacks, audio books and silver rounds and all kinds of wonderful things if you help support the show at scotthorton.org/donate. And also you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.